Okay, so we're going to start with just a couple of select topics in chapter 1. And chapter 1's an introduction as far as what chemistry is. And I'm going to write down the definition of chemistry here. Chemistry is a science that studies matter and the changes that matter undergoes. Or another part of chemistry is that it also studies the energy associated with the changes that matter undergoes. I'll put and. The energy associated with the changes that matter undergoes. So, clearly we're studying, the chemistry is involved with all aspects of matter. And we're going to talk about some of those as we get on in this. And one thing the chemists do is they classify matter. Okay, so it's a classification system, if you will, and a description. So there are various ways that chemists describe matter. And that's one of the things. Chemists also determine, if you can describe matter and you understand its properties, you can come up with useful, purposes of various kinds of matter. Okay, for example, chemists have made plastics, and because of the properties of those plastics, they're used for all different kinds of applications. Okay, some are plastic bags, some are like insulating fixtures for electrical things and so forth. Okay, so if you understand the matter and you fully describe it, you know what it's good for and how it's can be useful for people. The other thing is that when a chemical reaction occurs, that's one kind of change of matter. Well, there's always energy associated with that. So chemists are interested in that. And energy has to do, we'll be talking about energy quite a lot. The energy has to do with the stability of the material. So when in some chemical changes, energy is produced in the form of heat, light. You know, there's various forms of energy. In some chemical changes, energy is absorbed. So when energy is produced in the form of heat, it's pretty obvious, right? You know, like a stove, if anybody has a gas stove, when you turn it on and you see a flame, that's a chemical reaction and heat's being given off. So that's energy produced. There are various other devices. I don't know if anybody has ever, in first aid kits they have these packs. If you get injured, you can pull this pack out and it says a cold pack, and if you crush it, you know, it's not cold when you get it out of the first aid kit, but if you smash it, it turns cold. Well, that's a chemical reaction. And that chemical change is, I think it could be a chemical reaction, might not be. It might be a physical change, but it's a change of matter. And when that change occurs, it absorbs heat from the surroundings, so it gets cold. So there are kind of two processes in changes of matter that involve energy, and it's either energy is given off or energy is absorbed. And we'll talk about that. We don't go into detail on that, but there's a large area of study in chemistry that involves looking at energy changes in matter. So, I mentioned properties, right? Chemists catalog properties. Well, the properties are determined by the makeup of the matter in terms of the elements and atoms that are combined to make that up. So chemists, besides determining these properties, they also are interested in what's happening at the atomic level. The hard thing about chemistry, I think, for students is that we talk about molecules and atoms, you can't see them. But you can see this, you can see, you can see the tabletop. If we weigh something out in the lab, you can see that. Well then, when we induce a chemical change or observing a chemical change, we represent that with formulas that represent the atoms. Can't see the atoms. So that's kind of the hard thing. Okay, these are the atoms are undergoing these changes, and chemists use, there's a language of chemistry that includes names and formulas and symbols to represent those changes. Okay, so this is another definition that's in your book, but it's parallel to the definition I put up on the board. So the other part of this chapter, chapter one, besides explaining in very broad terms what chemistry is, it talks about the scientific method, and that's really the way that science moves forward. So we're not going to spend too much time on the scientific method, so I'm going to skip over it, other than say that science is advanced by when we say chemistry is a science that studies matter. Well, the way we study it is using the scientific method. So this part, the studying part, involves the scientific method. And it's just a structured way of gathering information. Okay, rather than in the early days of chemistry, I think most of the studying of chemistry was done in a kind of a haphazard and random way. There wasn't a structured or a systematic way of doing it. And so advances were hard to come by. It was rather confusing. If you looked at the body of work that was done, nobody could figure out what it was. It wasn't until there was structure was applied to it. And studies were done using the scientific method that the science of chemistry advanced. So it's just a systematic process for trying to understand nature. And that's about it. So I'm going to skip the rest of this about the scientific method. I will say this about it, is that the scientific method depends on experiments. So we're going to do some experiments in this lab, and we're going to observe some chemical changes, and in some cases we'll have to measure things out, and we'll weigh the reactants, and we'll weigh the products. So one thing about experimentation is that all this measuring and all this observing is recorded and is called data. So I don't know if it says data up there anywhere on this slide. But an experiment isn't any good unless you have a way of collecting data to record what's happening. So experiments and data go together. So experiments give data. Like I said, in this course, we're going to be generating lots of data, measuring lots of data. In this composition book that I ask you to bring on Wednesday is where we record the data for the experiments that we do. And there's two kinds of data. There's qualitative and there's quantitative. And the qualitative is more of descriptive kind of data. So you might say that a chemical reaction occurred and a gas was produced. You didn't measure it, but you observed that a gas was produced. That's called qualitative data. You might say that you mix two liquids and a solid formed. You might further describe it as a white solid, something like that. So qualitative data is something that you observe. It's always, data is observations, so let me write that. So it's an observation, you write it down, but it's a quality rather than the other kind of data, which is quantitative, which is a measurement. Both data are valuable. I think measured data, if you can measure something and put a number with it, it's a little bit better. And in chapter 2, we go and talk about measurements, because measurements are very important. So you can't move science forward unless you do experiments and you measure things. So I would say that the measured data is a little more powerful, has a little more reliability than just qualitative data. Now the thing about data from an experiment, it has to be reproducible. So you do an experiment, you collect the data, both qualitative and quantitative, you write it down. If somebody else did that same experiment, they should observe the same thing. They should be able to observe the same thing. So that's part of the scientific method, is that the experiments are reproducible, and that tends to validate, okay, what is going on with the particular study that's being done. And I think that quantitative, if you have measured data and you can, somebody else can come in behind you and do the same experiment and get the same measured results, well, that really validates it. That's pretty powerful. Okay, that means, okay, this is what's going on. We're pretty sure we know what's happening. So measurements are very important. I think one of the challenges of doing scientific research is figuring out ways to measure things. Okay, there's lots of ways to measure things. And so sometimes scientists have to invent a new measuring device. Okay, we're not going to invent any new measuring devices here, but sometimes you have to do that to get an actual value. And we'll talk about some of the ways we measure things in as we get into chapter 2. Are there any questions about that? So we're going to go on now. And the other parts of the scientific method, like there's some questions about the difference between hypothesis and theory. Okay, don't worry about that. Just remember, as you're studying, as you read through chapter 1, try to pick out the information in chapter 1 that corresponds to what I've spoken about in lecture. Okay. So I'm not going to ask anything about the topics in the book that I haven't covered in lecture. Okay, so your key is to read it ahead of time. Remember I said the way to study this is just read it ahead of time for, exposure to the material. And then after the lecture, go back and read it again and correlate with the topics I covered in lecture with what we've covered, what's in your book. Okay, and then you can go through and do the problems at the end of the chapter if you can find some that apply. That makes sense? Now, you don't have to write down everything that's on all these PowerPoints. If there's something important that I want you to know, I'll tell you. Okay, then I'll pause and leave it there. So, I don't know, has anybody looked at the PowerPoints online yet? Okay, so if you have, that's good. I was going to try to get you some things to hand you, but I haven't yet. So I'll try to, before Wednesday, I can give you the rest of the PowerPoints for chapter one. For Unit 1. After that, then I'd like you just to look online. But as I go through these PowerPoints, you don't have to remember every single word on the PowerPoint. Okay. So if there's something in particular, like I said, I want you to know that I'll tell you what it is. Okay, what is a measurement? What do you think are involved if you take a measurement? Just think. One way you can answer this question, what is a measurement, is to think about, what do you do if you measure something? And we've all measured something, right? What's a pretty common thing that everybody that you measure?
Time.
in everyday life. It doesn't have to be in a chemistry lab or a science lab. And just at home we measure things. Desiree, what'd you say? Weight. Right. So when you measure weight, what do you get? What are the... There are two things to a measurement. Right. A number and a unit. So a measurement equals a number and a unit. And it has to include both of those things. One part of that is no good without the other, right? If you just took a measurement, say you weighed yourself, and you wrote down that, that doesn't mean too much. If you weighed yourself and you wrote down, that doesn't mean very much either. They have to go together. And if you weighed 50 pounds, you'd be a pretty light person. If you weighed 50 kilograms, that's kind of a weight of a typical person. Kind of on the smaller side, but that's 50 kilograms is, it's not a bad weight. It's about 110, 120 pounds. So the unit and the number have to go together. Now, I like that. That's really important, that the number and the unit go together. And I'll probably ask you a question, maybe a multiple choice question on the test or quiz or something like that. Two things that are required for a measurement. And as we get into calculation, there are some calculations we have to do in this unit using measurements. Whenever you do a calculation, remember, you have to remember both of these. I think when we do calculations often using measurements, we fall into the trap of just doing the calculation with the number, and we tend to ignore the unit. While the unit guides you, is the guide. It tells you whether you're doing the calculation right. Because if you're doing a calculation and your answer is supposed to be a weight, and it could be grams or kilograms or pounds, there's lots of units that we use for measuring weight, then if you keep track of the unit in that calculation and the answer, and the unit in the answer is pounds or kilograms or grams, it means you did the calculation right. But if you do this calculation and the answer comes out kilograms squared, if you keep track of the units, well, kilogram squared isn't a value for weight, so you did something wrong in your calculation. You either multiplied or divided wrong. Okay. So most of our calculations are just multiplication and division, some addition and subtraction. But you need to keep track of the unit when you do the calculation. And that is a validates whether you've done the calculation correctly or not. So you have to include the numbers, but you also have to include the units. Remember, they both go together. Units, numbers, and units. So one other point about measurement. It says it's a quantitative observation. Remember over here I said measurements are quantitative data? So there's the connection there. Now, a measurement is an agreed-upon standard. So we'll talk about the standards a bit, but we won't emphasize those. I think the standards we take for granted. If there wasn't a standard, it means that we could call a weight unit a gram, but if a gram didn't represent the same thing in the United States as it did in Europe or in Russia or anywhere in the world, it wouldn't make much sense. Remember I said data is what we use to validate or to record observations from experiments. Well, if we're recording grams and then somebody someplace else in the world is trying to validate, but the gram doesn't mean the same thing, they couldn't do it. Okay, so that's where the standard comes in. The agreed upon standard is the gram is the same amount of weight anywhere. Okay, and a pound's the same amount of weight. There are lots of different ways of quantitative measurement. And there are, one of the most confusing things I think is liquid ounces and I guess, ounces of weight. If you don't specify what kind of ounce you're talking about, it's not clear all the time, whether you're measuring things in liquid ounces or mass ounces. So the unit tells you what quantity is being measured. And there are lots of different quantities. It's almost up to the imagination. There are some basic things you can measure, but then, like I said, scientists invent new things to measure all the time. Now, one of the main things about measurements is that there's an uncertainty. We spend quite a bit of time in this chapter talking about the uncertainty in measurements. And the uncertainty is connected to the numbers of significant figures in a measurement. So I'll write that down. And there is a unit or two in this chapter, a subsection that deals with significant figures. So I won't go into that now. But every measured value has an uncertainty. So all measurements have an uncertainty. The things that don't have uncertainty when we're dealing with numbers are, what, does anybody know? Counting numbers, right. We talk about counting numbers. Counting numbers don't have an uncertainty. So when we say there's 7 days in a week, there's exactly 7 days in a week. That's a counting number. So when we get to significant figures, we'll talk about that. Quickly, we'll go through section 2.2 in chapter 2 about scientific notation. I think you all know how to write things in scientific notation. We could spend a lot of time converting from decimal notation to scientific notation. So there's two ways that we're going to write numbers. There are more ways than that. We're going to write numbers in two different ways. Remember, these aren't measurements. These are just numbers. Measurement would have a unit attached to it, right? Number plus unit. But numbers, the number part, can be written in two different ways. What we call decimal notation, and the other one is scientific notation. And sometimes scientific notation is called exponential notation. So a decimal notation, let's call this kind of our normal way of viewing a number. You know, our number system is a decimal system. We count from 1 to 10. Then we start over again. Then we start at 11. The base 10 system, it's called. So, I don't know, there's 39.3 inches in 1 yard. So that would be a decimal number. Now, a number doesn't have to necessarily have a decimal point in it. There's 5,280 feet in a mile. I'm just kind of pulling some numbers out that I know. I can write down, but it doesn't have a decimal point here. It doesn't show it. But there is an implied decimal point. Where is it? It's right there. Yeah, so a lot of numbers aren't written with a decimal point, but that's a decimal number. We can convert these into scientific notation. And in scientific notation, some people call it the power of 10 number. So remember I said this is a base 10. Decimal means a base 10. So we can take the power of 10 out of this number. And so every scientific notation number has a power of 10 associated with it. And this box that I've written here is called the exponent. So I'll talk about the exponent. We're going to talk about the exponent several times in this course. So when I say exponent, I mean the power that the 10 is raised to. And that can be a positive or a negative number. So this number is, over here, is called the coefficient. So a scientific notation number includes a coefficient and a power of 10 exponent. Now the coefficient always has to be between 1, it's greater than 1, to less than 10. That means it could be 9.99999. Okay. But it has to be between 1 and 10, if you will. So if I was converting 39.3 to inches, what would I write here? I mean, I would write 3.93, right. So I have to keep all the values there, so 3.93. But since I moved the decimal point to the left here, when I've gone from here to here, these aren't the same. To make these the same, I have to multiply this by 10, right? If I multiply this by 10, I'd get 39.3. So that's where this comes in. This is multiplying by 10. And in this case, it'd be 10 to what power? 10 to the 1. Right. So when you write your exponent, it has to be between 1 and 10. If you move the decimal point to the left, you increase the exponent by 1. So the power of 10 is plus 1. So in this case, what would I write? 5,280. 5.280 times 10 to the 3. Okay. That's correct. So there's some other another kind of exponent. I said it's negative exponents, and you can see that if the exponent is positive, it means the number that we're talking about is greater than 1. So you could say positive exponents. Actually, equal numbers that are greater than 10, huh? Greater than 10, not greater than 1. Greater than 10. Greater than or equal to 10, I guess. See this over there with the reflection? Okay. So negative exponents then equal numbers that are less than 1. So let's look at a few examples of those. If our decimal number is 0.003333, for example, or how about 0.123, something like that. Clearly these are less than 1. Said if the numbers are less than 1, then we're going to have an exponent that's less than 1. So we'd write this in scientific notation. Again, the coefficient has to be between 1 and less than 10. So we'd write this as what? Coefficient? 3.333 times 10. And the exponent now, since this is less than 1, is going to be negative. And the number, as we see how far it's moved over, 1, 2, 3. That's negative 3. Does that make sense? You guys okay with that? Okay. And this one is even a smaller number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So I'll just note that down there. So that means this one would be written 1.393 times 10 to the negative 13th. Okay. You okay with that? So there's usually a couple of questions on a quiz converting back and forth. Okay, I'll give you some numbers and I'll say either write these in scientific notation or I'll give you the scientific notation and ask you to write it in decimal notation. You can go back and forth. All right, that's not too hard. But there's some problems at the end of your chapter covering that. There's another exponent we can have. I said we can have scientific notation numbers written with positive exponents and scientific notation numbers written with negative exponents. What else is there? So numbers can be positive, greater than something. Numbers can be negative. And what is in between positive and negative? Zero, right? So exponent can also be zero. So let's look at a scientific notation where zero is the exponent. So if we have a number like this, so there's a number, 9.341 times 10 to the zero. Since the coefficient is between 1 and 10, and there's a power of 10 with an exponent, that's a valid scientific, a number written in valid scientific notation. Okay. So we'll say this is a scientific notation number. What would our decimal number be? 9.341, correct. Okay. 10 to the 0 is what? 1, right. So 9.341 can be written in scientific notation by putting times 10 to the 0. So if you looked at this number and said, we can't write that in scientific notation, that's not correct. You can. You just put the power of 10 there, and the power of 10 happens to be 0. Does that make sense? Might seem like a trick, but it's a valid scientific notation number. So why do you think we would use scientific notation numbers? What would they be good for? Right. So scientific notation numbers are really good for very large and very small numbers. Now, in studying chemistry, we do encounter these kinds of numbers. You guys are mostly pre-nursing, right? In pre-nursing, I don't think when you're dosing somebody, you ever have to use scientific notation. Okay, you'll always be using decimal numbers. Because you don't ever give doses, unless you're counting, wanting to calculate the number of molecules of a drug or something, or number of atoms as you're giving them, then you'd use scientific notation to do that. But you don't have to do that. In microbiology, though, I think you might, because this is a prerequisite course for microbiology. So in some of your micro courses, you culture microbes that you've maybe obtained from different surfaces or something, or maybe from the lab technician, they've given you a solution, and you're supposed to culture grow the bacteria and see how many bacteria were in your original solution. Well, bacteria can be millions, maybe not billions, I don't know, but you could have billions of bacteria in a jug container. So you would have to probably use scientific notation to represent the numbers of bacteria in a container. So I don't think in pre-nursing you'll use scientific notation, but in micro, I think definitely you will. And in this course, you will. So there's some, if you read these slides, as you go through the book and read these slides, they talk about how to convert numbers from decimal notation to scientific notation and vice versa. Okay, so I don't think we can... We have to continue to cover that. So let's go on to the next topic. And that's significant figures. Oops. Significant figures. All right. So section 2.3, writing numbers to reflect precision. So what did I say earlier? What do the numbers of significant figures show when you do a measurement? Uncertainty, right. They always show the uncertainty. Because every measured value has an uncertainty. And precision is another way to describe uncertainty. And we'll, I think what I'll do is I'll bring out actually some actual examples of various measurements. We'll look at those. And we will determine which one is the most accurate based on what the significant figures tell us. Okay, so there's a way to read a number and the number of significant figures. So significant figures in a measurement, remember they only apply to measured numbers, for one thing. So I should write that. So the corollary to that is that they don't apply to counting numbers. So there's 12 in a dozen. That's an exact number. So there's no significant figures associated with that. You might think of, significant figures just don't apply. I would say there's infinite number of significant figures, but they just don't apply. So time, so our measurement of time, there's 60 minutes in an hour, doesn't apply. If you're measuring the time it takes to do something, like sometimes we time chemical reactions, well, we might measure this reaction took 1 minute and 10.3 seconds. Well, in that case, significant figures do apply. Okay, but if we're converting from seconds to minutes or minutes to hours, significant figures don't apply because those are exact numbers. There's 60 seconds in a minute, and there's 60 minutes in an hour, and so forth. Okay, so those are called counting numbers. So one thing you need to be able to do is distinguish between counting numbers and measured numbers. So if I put down several things here. Let's say I said I filled up with gas the other day and my gas tank took 11.385 gallons. Would that be a measure number or a counting number? Measured, right. Okay, so we measured a volume. Okay, it's not a counting number. But say that I went to the store the other day and I bought one apple. So I gave one apple to the thing. I gave the cashier a dollar. Say the apple cost 65 cents and the cashier gave me 35 cents in change. That measured accounting. Counting, right? Because we're counting pennies. So I can ask you, what are we counting? We're counting pennies here. 35 pennies is what that's equal to. It's not 35 and a half pennies. It's not 35 and a quarter. It's exactly 35 pennies. So that's right. So that's what I mean about being able to distinguish between a measured number and a counting number. This one's measured. The gallons are measured. And the change, the money is counting. That make sense? So there are some calculations that we're going to do that include both measured numbers and counting numbers, and we only apply the significant figures to the measured numbers. Okay, the counting numbers are NA. They're not applicable. Counting numbers are not applicable. Your book calls them exact numbers. Maybe I should write that up, too. I call them counting numbers, but the book calls them exact numbers. So let's... Okay. So number of significant figures in a measurement indicate the uncertainty. It says here. So the system of writing measurements we use is called significant figures. The measurements are written to indicate the significant... the uncertainty, so significant figures show uncertainty. That's what we've talked about already. So we say what we do, when we write measurements down, all the numbers that are written, and on this slide it shows a number, 45.872, and if it's really a measurement, it should have a unit with it. Okay, so I'm going to try to be careful to make sure I put units. There's no unit there. But all the last digit to the right is called the uncertain digit or the estimated digit. All the other digits to the left are called the certain digits. So in any measurement, and I'll use my gallon measurement up here on the board, which digit up here is the uncertain digit in this gallon measurement? The 5, that's right. It's the very last one. So that's the uncertain digit. And which measurements are, or which numbers that are the certain digits? All the rest. Right, so 1, 1, 3, 8. These are certain. Okay, now that's pretty easy to do. If I gave you a measurement, you could do that. Now what's hard to do is to look at a measured value and write down what it's supposed to be. That's what's hard. Okay, so let's practice that. Okay, when are we done? 4 minutes? Wow, okay. Do this real quick. Okay, so I'm going to get a couple of devices out here. This one. Oh, that's a little big. Okay, so I have 2 measured volumes here. And here's what I want you to do. I want everybody to take out a piece of paper. I guess you have a piece of paper. I'd like you to write down what you see here. Okay, so here's our devices, our measuring devices. Okay, write down what you think these measured values are. So on the left-hand side, this is 5 mils, that's 10 mils, that's 6, 7, 8, 9. So 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And over here we've got 8, let's see, in between marks it goes 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So it's 8, and then the first line is 2 mils, no, 8.2. So this is 0.2, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8, and then the next value. So each little line here is 0.2 mil. Each big line here is 1 mil. So what you want to do is write down those values. Everybody write them down for the graduated cylinder on the left and the graduated cylinder on the right. And the way you measure volumes is it's the volume is equal to the bottom of the meniscus. That's all the meniscus. So in a liquid, you see there's kind of curved like that. You look at the volume at the bottom. So write that down. And again up here, the volume at the bottom of that curved shape. That's how you read the volumes. So write that down. Shouldn't take too long. We have like 30 seconds. You know what I'm really looking for? I'm not looking for the exact number. I'm looking to see how many decimal places you're going to write down for the answer. Because the number of decimal places tells you what the uncertainty is. So I'm going to write something down, 2. And let's see, the one on the left, I would say, is something like, and the other one is, okay, everybody do that? Okay, so here's what I came up with. Let's see. Okay, so the big one, this one, is the one that's 8.5 mils about. Okay, so that's what you should have written down. What I'm really looking for is that you've written down not necessarily 8.5. It could have been 8.4. It could have been 8.6. Any of those are okay. But what I was looking for is that this value here is the certain digit. And you know that's certain because if you look here on this scale, there's a line for 8 mils. Remember I said that's 5, 6, 7, 8? There's a line for 8. What there isn't a line for is the decimal value. You have to guess for that. You may have written down 8.0. I would accept 8.02. I'm looking for the one decimal place. So this is certain, and this value is uncertain. So the uncertainty is in that one decimal place, and whenever the way we interpret this uncertainty here is that it's equal to plus or minus 0.1 ml. These are all mLs. The uncertainty in this big flask is plus or minus 0.1 ml. That make sense? Okay, now what we're going to do at the end of the semester, we're going to have a lab practicum. I'm going to have a flask sitting here like this with liquid in it. I want you to write down the volume with the right number of sig figs in it. If you don't, it's not right. Okay, it has to be exactly written like that. Now I said any of these values would be right, but it has to have one decimal place. So what's not right? 8 mils is not right, and 8.50 mils is not right. Okay, neither of those are right. It has to have one decimal place. The second one is because each division is a tenth, it means that both of these are certain, and this one is uncertain. So the uncertainty is in the hundredths column, and that means that the uncertainty would be described as plus or minus 0.01 ml. So we always say the uncertainty is plus or minus 1 in whatever decimal column that occurs. All right, so in this case, it's in the hundredth decimal column, so we say it's plus or minus 0.01. In this case, the uncertainty is in the tenths column, so it's plus or minus 0.1. That makes sense? So there's some problems that ask about uncertainty. So how many? What is the uncertainty in this measured number? It's plus or minus 1 in whatever column that uncertain digit occurs in. So let's go back to my gallons that I measured before. And what would be the uncertainty in this measured value? Plus or minus 0.0. What else? 0. 1. It's always 1. This is always 1, okay? That's going to be the way we assess uncertainty in a measured number. It's in that decimal column, but it's always 1. Okay, so read up through section 2.3 in detail on significant figures, and when we get to when we come back on Wednesday, we'll talk about significant figures in calculations.